House Attorney General's Office representing the Texas Real Estate Commission. May it please the court. This is a case about statutory construction of what we believe is a very, very clear provision in the Real Estate License Act applicable to claims in the Real Estate Recovery Trust account. It's a limitations provision, and I'm going to address that. First, these cases are always a little bit unusual because the Real Estate Commission is coming in after a judgment is entered as a sort of, they're essentially a statutory intervener. Just a very, very brief overview of the fund. The Real Estate Recovery Trust account was established by the legislature many years ago to compensate aggrieved persons who were wronged as a result of the actions of a real estate broker or licensee. The fund is limited in terms of dollars. It's financed by license fees, and there are certain procedural hoops that a claimant has to jump through before he or she can make a claim from the fund. We don't really dispute any of those. You have to abstract the judgment. You have to have an execution issued in return, nulla bona, no property found. In this case, we don't dispute that that any of that was not done. Then the aggrieved person can come back. They have to come back to the same court that issued the underlying judgment, and they can make a claim from the fund. At that point, under the Real Estate License Act, the commission, for the very first time, has the right to step in and defend the fund. And when I say defend the fund, if there is a valid claim, the commission wants to pay the claim. And
Mr. Ross, might be clear for me when the time is that you just identified when the Attorney General could step in and defend the fund. When is that time?
After the claimant files a claim for recovery from the trust account and gives the Attorney General or the Real Estate Commission notice.
And that's the time after there's already been an establishment of liability for the party who is covered by the Real Estate Recovery Fund provisions and a final judgment entered and a recording of that judgment and a abstracting of that judgment and a return of a written nulla bona.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So there's no action required or contemplated to be taken by the Attorney General on behalf of the recovery fund until that time is reached.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But you can intervene in the original case.
Your Honor, there's nothing in the statute that says that the commission can't intervene in the case. Our position is that, however, if that were a requirement, if the commission were required to intervene in every single action which results in a judgment forming the basis of recovery, they're going to have to come in and do it twice.
And
that's
what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's what the statute says. The statute says that a cause of action which may result in a judgment that forms the basis of a claim from the real estate recovery trust account must be brought within 2 years of the time that cause of action accrues. And we maintain that is clear and unambiguous.
So they're supposed to anticipate that all these things are going to happen, that I'm going to get a judgment and I'm going to execute it and it's going to be returned and they've got to anticipate that all those things are going to happen and file within this specific, which you deem to be identified to be a statute of limitations.
Well, Your Honor, with respect to anticipating things, that a claimant is going to know the basis of his or her cause of action, whether it's fraud, whether it's misrepresentation on the part of the broker or the licensee. And then with respect to the subsequent steps of, you know, having the judgment abstracted and issuing the execution, those are just formalities that any claimant or his or her attorney can undertake. So in terms of anticipating anything, and I'll still just say from my experience in representing the commission, there are, the plaintiff's lawyers in these cases know about the real estate recovery trust account, and it's a matter of statute. It's out there. The vast majority of the judgments in these kinds of cases are default judgments, and there are many of these types of cases that are really, from the very beginning, they're targeted from the real estate recovery trust account. And so I don't think it's a matter of really a plaintiff or a potential claimant being in the dark from the beginning about the fund. It's, again, it's a matter of statute, sort of akin to a an insurance risk pool. Everybody knows there's an insurance risk pool out there. It's not really, you know, it's a matter of statute. And
well, it's not that I'm saying that they don't know that it exists. It's just that the claimant's got to anticipate that the judgment's not going to be satisfied by the person that they got the judgment against. That's what they've got to anticipate.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's often, you know, that's often the case that it's not, because, again, many of these are default judgments and there are no assets, and the execution is and the return is a formality. In nearly every case, you have to tell the constable whether you know of any property out there. No one hardly ever knows of any property out there, and so the writ is just returned. And so, you know, yes, that those requirements have to be met, but our position is that, you know, that's clear and that's a matter of statute. With respect to the 2 years versus the 4 years, these claims get stale, and fraud, especially fraud and misrepresentation claims, are based on he said, she said. In the legislature, I believe the policy decision by the legislature coming in and saying, you know, fine, if you want, you have 4 years, plaintiff claimant, to sue anybody based on fraud, including your broker or licensee, that's between you and them. You can wait to the three years and 364th day to file a lawsuit if you want to. However, if you're going to make a claim against a fund, this limited fund with limited resources, and with the commission having the right to come in and relitigate after a claim is made, we're not going to make the commission go back, you know, as much as 4 years before and try to sort through and ascertain evidence which may be stale, witnesses may be unavailable or whatever. I believe that's the policy basis. I do, Your Honor, but I don't think it's a trap, because I think it's a matter of balancing the requirements for a just claim against, you're correct, the remedial nature of the fund. The fund is intended to compensate persons who have been harmed by misconduct on the part of brokers and licensees. And the commission's position is not that, you know, we're going to make sure, we're going to keep claims down, we're going to make sure as few claims get paid as possible. That's not the commission's position. They get scores and dozens and hundreds of claims against this account every year. And so the commission's position is just to make sure, and it's their statutory duty, to just make sure that the statutory requirements are complied with. Many times, the vast majority of times, these matters are not disputed and claims are paid.
What provision of the statute requires that?
Your Honor, it's 1101-608 paren 2 of the Real Estate License Act, which says that the TREC, I can get you the exact language here. That's it, Your Honor.
How do you respond? respond to their argument that you only challenged the trial court's jurisdiction and that you didn't argue a limitations defense?
Your Honor, I've concluded that it's correct. It was not a jurisdictional matter. However, the record, I believe, is very clear in our response to their claim for recovery, and the reporter's record reflects at the hearing on this matter, we definitely asserted the statute of limitations defense. And the commission, under the Act, has a right to come in and relitigate. And we definitely did that. We definitely asserted that, you know, taking the pleadings as true. There's really, for the purpose of this case, there's no factual dispute. Taking the pleadings as true, Ms. Bayless was aware of something was wrong well before 2 years before her cause of action accrued. And we argued that at length in our response into the district court.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
I'm looking at 1101.605. And you've used the phrase a couple of times, the date the cause of action accrues. And you started your discussion, and I asked you some questions earlier about when it is that the fund is focused on action to be taken first time by the fund. Mm-hmm. And that is after the time when the claimant has perfected a judgment and filed it and it's been returned. And at that point in time is when the fund will take action in terms of looking at the compliance with the statutes under 1101.608. Is all that right?
Yes, Your Honor, I would just add to that the Attorney General comes in only after a claim from the fund is filed in the court.
And so the time when the 2-year period of limitation would commence is when the cause of action arises against the fund under the language in the legislature, because it's not talking about cause of action between the claimant and the person covered by the Real Estate Recovery Fund as to establishing liability, but rather the point at which the time arrives for the commission to take action on a claim, that is, it qualifies by virtue of the language in the recovery fund as to being a protected person. 2-year time we're talking about on the cause of action accruing is the time when the fund would begin to be involved in the process.
Well, Your Honor, I would go back to the very beginning of 1101.605A. In the language, it says an action for a judgment that may result in an order for payment from the real estate trust account must be brought after the second anniversary of the date that cause of action accrues. The statute says it's an action for a judgment that may result in a claim that has to be brought within 2 years, not an action for recovery from the fund.
That's why before I think that I'm different from what you're looking at it in my reading of the statute, is the judgment that I prefer. I'm thinking that statute refers to is the judgment against the fund, not the judgment person who was liable for the misconduct that caused the right of recovery to be involved in the first instance, but rather in the second instance when the issue arises, can I go get up to $50,000 from the fund? Incidentally, I want to tell you something. When you go back and look at 1975 and this Recovery Act was passed, it says on the records that passed by Senator Lyndon from Houston. I was a co-sponsor of that bill, and I handled the discussion on the floor debate. I was not involved in the statute of limitations issues that came up in 2003, which is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want you to be surprised if you can go back and read that and see that the person talking about the intention of this act on the floor of the Senate, Senator Meyer,
Well, thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. And I didn't go all the way back to hear the tapes. I did look at the bills and the bill analyses on this limitations provision. Was not able to find anything. If I may, Your Honor, just
Right.
If I may briefly address, the first of all, 605A distinguishes a judgment from an order. A judgment results in an order for payment, and then throughout the subsequent statutes, references to an order for payment. So I think the legislature distinguished between judgment, meaning based on the underlying cause of action, and order, meaning order for payment from the real estate trust account. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the background. I see that my time is up, so I'll reserve my balance. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. We are here today asking for this court to rule that Chapter 1101 of the Texas Occupations Code creates a statutory cause of action, which it clearly does, for the collection from the Real Estate Recovery Fund. This statutory cause of action is granted to successful victims versus the fund, also called today the trust account. That this statutory cause of action is separate and distinct from the underlying cause of action sounding in fraud between the victim and the realtor. The statutory cause of action, based upon our interpretation and reading the statute, only accrues when the claimant has one, obtained a final judgment sounding in fraud, two, issued a writ of execution return nulla bono, and three, that the judgment lien has been perfected. As our Supreme Court, the Texas Supreme Court stated in the 1990 case Williams versus Califf, cited with approval by appellant. In footnote 3, the court there talking about this particular provision or statutory causes of action in general stated the legislature has enacted a number of statutes providing express limitations periods for statutory causes of actions, and referring to the predecessor statute under the Texas Civil Statutes annotated 6573A, that the limitations period there stated in the statutory cause of action is 2 years for collection from the real estate recovery fund, which is consistent with the arguments I've heard in the questions advanced here this morning, which is the cause of action in fraud against the underlying realtor is separate and distinct from the action against the fund. The action against the fund is a statutory cause of action, which has a 2-year limitations period, but that doesn't begin to accrue until those three ducks have been lined up: the underlying judgment, the writ nulla bono, and the abstracted judgment. After those ducks have been lined up, then you have a cause of action, and only then do you have a cause of action against the fund. Prior to that, at the commencement date of the lawsuit, do you have a cause of action? Has a cause of action accrued against the fund? No. Even when you've obtained a judgment, do you have a cause of action against the fund? No, it has not yet accrued. After the judgment and writ nulla bono, do you have a cause of action? No. Not until you get the third duck do you have a cause of action. At that point, this being a statutory cause of action, your time accrues, and that's where the 2 years kicks in.
From how do you reconcile that with the language in 1101.605 that was read previously, the very beginning language that says that the cause of action that it becomes the basis for the order accrues or has to be filed within 2 years?
Well, the language is an action for a judgment that may result in an order for payment from the trust account may not be brought after the second anniversary of the date of the cause of action accrues.
Right. How do you reconcile that language with what you've just been saying?
Well, it's poor drafting to start with, or we wouldn't be here. But how I would reconcile that is, as the Supreme Court in William versus Califf referred to it, it's a cause of action, it's a 2-year period relating to by and between the victim and the fund, not the victim and the realtor. Now, the word in their judgment is what throws a ringer in this. And if you look in Black's Law Dictionary, judgment is basically a final order from the court. I would interpret this to be that the word judgment, A, being injected in there, is in essence sloppy drafting, but I think it's there to imply the finality of the order for payment from the fund. And that's basically the argument that we made in the trial court, is that the judgment should be read to read, in essence, a final decision from the trial court that may result in an order for payment from the trust account. This case, you know, this issue has not been previously decided. Courts before, and possibly in this case, have been able to resolve the issue without reaching, decide the case without reaching this issue through the exercise of judicial restraint. I think the issue needs to be addressed, but I think the clear intent here is to insure and indemnify the victims. And the only reading of that makes, to me, logical sense is that the 2 years applies once those three ducks I referred to have been lined up. Let me give you an example as to why our rationale or our reasoning makes more sense jurisprudentially. Let's assume the 2 years is not an issue, that the cause of action is brought within 2 years of the date of the bad act. So we don't have a 2-year issue. If that 2-year limitation doesn't apply to the cause of action between the victim and the fund, then we get an absurd result. The absurd result would come about if the 2 years is not an issue, a judgment for fraud is obtained, and I've had a case close to this, so this happens in the real world, the judgment is abstracted, writ of execution comes back null and bono, and nothing happens. For 10, 15, 20 years. If the 2 years of two-year limitation doesn't apply to an action against the fund, then 15 years later, when somebody wakes up, a new lawyer comes in, says, you know, there's a fund for this. Let's file an action against that fund. Now, 10, 15, 20 years later, if that 2 years doesn't apply, and the 2 years applies on the front end, now they can 15, 20 years later go back against the fund. That leads to an absurd result because of a couple of things. There's no security for the fund. It's an open-ended claim or shot at the fund. And it would lead to, like I said, an absurd result. Because if the purpose of the Attorney General managing or intervening is to ensure the integrity of the fund, this limited fund they talk about, which the last time I looked was $3.5 million, then there's no stability to this, the management of the fund, if the backside is open-ended. Not only would they be stale, very stale, because one of the things you have to do under this act as the victim is assign your rights. Basically, give everything you have, the abstracted judgment, the assignment of the claim, assign your rights to the fund so that someday they may be made whole. But in my scenario, 10, 15, 20 years later, if you've done nothing, that judgment is stale. Your abstract is meaningless. Then there's no right to the fund. The fund, it increases the instability.
Mr. Walton, I'd like to take you one step beyond what you're saying and ask you if the interpretation that's urged by the Attorney General is correct. Then, in every instance, if there is a doubt of collectability of a judgment that might be obtained against a realtor, would cause the necessity. necessity of adding the fund to the case as a defendant at the start of the initial litigation between the claimant and the realtor. Because if you've got a 4-year period of time to sue for a issue of fraud committed by the realtor, and that's going to require that you give, that you involve the fund within 2 years, then you're obviously going to have to join the fund as a party on the front end before you ever determine the issue of liability.
That's true, and then you face the argument that, well, our cause of action against the fund hasn't accrued because you don't have your judgment,
which
you don't have your abstract.
Is the epitome of the absurd results that you can take on the statute. If you're, what you're saying is you're going to require the Attorney General to take part in every piece of litigation between the claimant and the realtor that involves fraud.
That's our position. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. First of all, Your Honors, I cited the Califf case to address the trial court's construction of this of 605A as somehow being just a notice provision, and the trial court said that it was really a notice provision akin to a claims from a municipality. I frankly don't understand that analogy. What Califf footnote 3 says, it says that limitations period of 2 years from collection from real estate recovery fund, it says nothing about when that accrues or when a cause of action has to be brought from. In terms of poor drafting, again, I don't think it's poor drafting. We all can disagree with, or we don't like what a statute says. I believe that for the reasons that I've argued, that the statute is clear, it distinguishes between a judgment and the underlying cause of action and an order from the recovery fund. And again, throughout the recovery fund subsequent statutes, they refer to orders, action for an order from the recovery fund, order from the recovery fund. And I think that's clear language. And
I think under rules of statutory construction, regardless of whether a statute is ambiguous, we are allowed to consider the consequences of a particular construction in construing the statute. And so if you could respond to that
Sure.
construction argument. I mean, does the fund really want to have, I mean, I think there's a legitimacy to the argument that the statute of limitations has either got to apply on the front end or the back end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Appleby's position being it applies on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's got to apply on one end or the other, do you really want it to apply on the front end? And then it seems like your argument about the staleness of claims, which is also legitimate, would be exacerbated because you could have 15 or 10 years later someone
mm-hmm.
filing a claim against the fund.
Your Honor, I do agree the court can consider the consequences of any construction. I would say you know, there are arguments on both sides with respect to absurd results. Well, the scenario that Mr. Wozniak addressed, I'll just say, I've never in my experience, and my predecessor, I can say too, has had a situation where they go get a judgment, a plaintiff goes and gets a judgment against a broker, and then just waits 10 or 15 years. I'm not saying that can't happen. That could certainly happen. But I think the far more likely scenario is what Justice Meyer just pointed out to Mr. Wozniak, which is if you go on the back end, then the Attorney General is going to have to intervene to argue a limitations provision or some other provision with respect to the fund, which would then render all of the recovery fund provisions, including the Attorney General's right to intervene and defend the fund, meaningless. And I think that's a far more likely absurd result. And so that would be my response. Thank you. And, Your Honor, the only I just wanted to point out one other thing, Justice Gabriel, with respect to the intervention and in conclusion. And there are very few cases that even involve, very few published decisions that even involve claims from the fund, and Mr. Wozniak is correct that There's no case directly addressing these facts, but in the Nagel case, Texas Real Estate Commission v. Nagel, 767 Southwest 2nd, 691, the Texas Supreme Court pointed out, referring to the notice provision in the predecessor statute to 605B, that it's often impractical for the commission to directly intervene. And the court said, because the aggrieved person must first attain a final judgment against a broker or salesman, which cannot be collected, perfect a judgment, lien, et cetera, then give the commission 20 days written notice, seldom will direct intervention be possible on the part of the commission. I would just point that case out to your honors, and I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.